Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Women of Color Network Hour, where we will discuss specific topics related to gender-based violence and its impact on the African-American community. The Women of Color Network is a project of the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence and is dedicated to...
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. My name is Dr. Vanessa Caldwell-Jenkins, and tonight I will be hosting the show. Our topic will be the impact of bystander intervention in domestic violence. Tonight I have guests with me that will be helping me usher us through this conversation. My first guest is Tony Walker, who is a consultant and the former NSU Chief of Police. I have Catherine Staten, who is the CEO and founder of My Help, My Hope, and also Natalie Purdy, who's also an advocate and a speaker. I'd like to welcome my guests. Are they on the line now?
This is Natalie Purdy.
Yes, how are you doing, Natalie? Welcome to the show. Do I have Tony Walker?
So
are you on the air? Do I have Catherine Staten? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. Welcome to the show tonight. How are you ladies doing tonight?
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Yes. You know, tonight is going to be a very interesting topic. You know, we've got a lot of issues that are facing us serving victims of domestic violence. But one of the ones that stand out the most to me right now is the whole issue around bystander intervention. Got us some questions and wanted to have some good dialogue, and I'm hoping our listeners will call into the show if they have any questions of my panelists here on the air with me, as well as myself. So let's start this off tonight. Let me just go around and let everybody introduce themselves. Start with you, Catherine. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Kathy Staten, and I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and an advocate as well. And I have a foundation called the My Help, My Hope Foundation, which is geared towards domestic violence awareness and helping women and children in crisis.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Natalie Purdy, can you tell us a little about yourself?
Absolutely. I'm also a survivor and a speaker and advocate against domestic violence, and I actually partner up with Kathy Staten, as well as some of the other Domestic Violence Foundation.
Great. And do we have our Tony Walker? Are you online? Okay, he must be having some technical difficulties, but we're going to go on in and start the conversation. Let's look at this here. Do you guys feel, let's talk about this, do you feel that it's the responsibility of the bystander to speak up when they see or witness domestic violence? Anybody can take a stab at that. What do you think? Do you think that's the bystander's responsibility to speak up if they see or witness domestic violence?
Absolutely. I think it is their responsibility to speak up and to say something, or saying something could save that person's life. Why stand and watch someone be abused? There is something that they could do besides look, or what they're doing now filming it with their cell phones. You know, it's a lot of things that they could do to help that, to help that person that they see being abused. If not, you know, call the police, do something, but don't just, you know, be a bystander and do nothing.
Gotcha.
I agree. I think that it's a social responsibility. Everybody plays a role.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting to me because you're right. I think that Kathy made a statement as far as people just watching with their phones. But it just seems like, particularly in the African-American community, it's like normalized. It's like people just watch it happen, and then we get caught up with, should we tell, should we not tell? Now, we talked about them as far as intervening, but do you think that people are beginning to feel, or they've always felt, or still continue to think, that domestic violence should be private, you know, that what goes on in our home stays in our home? Do you think that that has culturally, we've embraced that and we're still holding on to that? What do you guys think about that?
I think they're holding on to it. I think it's rooted in history and culture. I like you said, and I think that they think that you're not supposed to say anything. It's embarrassing. It's degrading, you know, and how, you know, if someone hears that something like that happened, you know, to you, nobody, you know, just like the survivor, they don't want to tell anybody. It's embarrassing. Even a family member, if they see it, you know, they're quiet about it because it's a taboo behind it. So, you know, it's a stigma behind it because it's really, really embarrassing, you know, to even know that that's happening in the family, or to know that it's happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do you have any opinion on it, Natalie?
I agree. It is definitely something that's gone back in history. And a lot of times when they don't seek the help and nobody knows that you need the help, sometimes it's too late. And then the family members hear about it later after the person is gone, and they never knew that there was domestic violence in the household.
Where do you think this private thing actually came from, Natalie? Where do you, you know, as you were growing up, was that the same for you, that, you know, was that told to you, you know, what goes on in our home stays in our home? Was that something that was embraced by your family? Or
Absolutely.
Do you know, friends? Yeah.
That was definitely embraced in my household. I didn't have abuse, but it was even if it was hard times, even if we don't have enough to eat, you don't go and tell someone else. You don't tell anyone. You don't even tell family members because it's a struggle. And a lot of times there's so many different types of prejudice that a person feels. And so when you really are saying don't tell anyone, it's just because you know that they'll look at you in a certain way. And sometimes when you try to seek help and you don't get it, it's even more painful. So it's easier to just hide it and don't talk about it. And that just stemmed over to different types of abuses. A lot of times with child abuse and sexual abuse, it's always keep quiet and you don't tell anyone what's going on, and then it's trickled down to domestic violence as well.
Hello, Dr. V, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. How are you doing?
Hi, this is Chief Walker. I'm on the phone now. I was just listening in.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
We'll get to you in a second. But, Kathy, what about you and your family, you know, with – was it, you know, pretty much a taboo, you know, like what goes on in our home stays in our home and it's no one's business? Was that something that your family kind of embraced a little bit as well?
From what I remember, no. I saw abuse in my family. I was abused as a teenager by my mom, and that wasn't, I've never heard that, being said. I did myself speak out because I got tired of being hit with sticks and 2x4s and switches and stuff. And I actually remember going to a high school counselor regarding me being abused, and you know, and I saw my mom being abused by men, you know, men, and then, like I said, I was abused, and I had something, what they call was, once I told the school counselor, I was emancipated.
Okay.
And,
okay.
You know, I left the home a little early because of that. And so, but no, it was, that wasn't, you know, what was told in my household. It just, you know, we just dealt with it.
Gotcha. You know, it's real interesting because it seems as though that with that whole thing about what goes on in the home stays in the home, it's just the I guess, that whole concept of beginning the stages of the bystander intervention, just the whole concept of being a bystander. I think that we need to do a better job. But then, you know, let me, I'm going to direct this question primarily to the survivors here. If you would like to share your story, if there were any bystander events that took place that you witnessed, or that witnessed the incident that happened to you personally. And if they did anything, if so, what? And if not, do you know why they didn't? And we can start with you, Kathy, if you wish to tell your story.
It wasn't, in my situation, a couple times, it wasn't a bystander like on the outside, but I could use my son. I mean, when I used him, he was a bystander. And I would actually force him to go in the room when my ex-husband would come home, because we never knew his attitude. We never knew what he was going to do or how he was going to act when he walked through the door. We were always walking on eggshells. So I would make him go in the room and put his headphones on so that he wouldn't hear what was going on. Well, he got tired of that. So he was listening the whole time, and as years went, you know, a year or two went on, and he got older, he started coming out of the room. And when he would hear us fussing and hear him, you know, about to hit me or hear us arguing, he would jump in it, you know, or try to jump in it and get in it. And I'm in between both of them and, you know, trying to get him, my son, away, because I'm like, Lord, if this man hits my child, you know, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So he started, you know, he was a bystander, but then he started doing something he wanted to help me, leave my mom alone. Then you hear her say stop, you know, and things like that. So as he got older, he started trying, you know, he, you know, wanted to do something.
Wow. You know, I just want to just say this too, you know, listeners, if you're out there and you're all calling in, please press 1 if you have a question or comment. Okay, next let's talk to Natalie. Natalie, do you want to share your story? And then talk about the fact if there were bystanders that witnessed, and if they did do something, so what? And if they did not, do you know why they didn't?
Absolutely. And with my story, my boyfriend at the time, I was breaking up with him, and I was telling him that I didn't want to marry him. And he was upset, but he didn't show that he was upset. And as I was walking him to the door, he grabbed a pair of scissors and started stabbing me. But we weren't home alone. My grandmother was home, so she was the bystander. And she didn't know what was going on in the room. She actually had no idea until she walked in, and then she thought he was punching me. And once she went to go grab him to get him off of me, she realized that he was stabbing me, and she ran out of the room and ran to call 911.
Okay.
So that was my bystander that saved my life. And I've been a bystander a year ago. I was at an apartment complex visiting my cousin, and I heard a couple fighting, and I stood outside their apartment door and listened enough to realize that it was some physical violence going on, and I called the police, and I waited until the police came and stood back just enough to hear the woman say that he wasn't home, that he left, to hear her say that they weren't fighting, that it was the TV. she said he wasn't there, he left, but she was watching a movie. She couldn't name what the movie was. And a couple of months later, I ended up actually meeting that victim and helping her escape that situation.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, you bring up an interesting point when, you know, even though I know I asked you as a survivor to ask the question, you know, I have Chief Walker on, the former Chief of Police of Norfolk State. Let me ask the question, because we all have families, we have friends. Do you guys, and I'll ask you first, Chief, find it difficult just, you know, when we see things going on in our families, or even you're going over to a friend's house, difficulty in responding? Do you have any experience that's happened to you, and what did you do?
Well, as a first responder in the years that as being a police officer dealing with domestic violence, before it was legislated that police had the authority to not depend on the victim to identify whether or not the aggressor was present, just the mere fact that there was an allegation, and then the persons could be taken out of the home, whether they were male or female. An arrest could be made based on the discretion of the officer. So legislation made it much easier and much wiser for police response to domestic violence. In years prior to that, there were situations where we, as police officers, law enforcement personnel, would respond to homes where, not understanding the trauma effect that women were going through, thinking that they had a choice to leave the home, and without our intervention, it proved to be very difficult. As a matter of fact, I was involved in several domestic incidents, but one of many was where a house I responded to many times, and every opportunity to try to remove the woman from the home, she refused and became dependent on a man, and eventually lost her life to that. And, you know, soon after, you know, legislation, I'll never forget the fact that, you know, it was mandated that police had the discretion to go into domestic violence situations. Still, there are struggles with police officers who go in because they are human beings who are wearing a badge, and, you know, they don't understand using their own discretion versus utilizing the law to remove combatants from that situation. And combatant doesn't necessarily have to be a male. It could be a female. To deal with issues involving same-sex issues, understanding the fact that, you know, two men fighting or two women fighting in a domestic situation, that prejudices that people have of those types of situations, and not understanding the broader picture and the holistic approach to trying to remove domestic violence from those types of situations has proven to be a challenge to police officers. And as I travel the country training, you know, getting the officers to be engaged in understanding that it's not the sex of the persons involved or the gender. It's the fact that there is violence in that situation.
Wow, thank you. You know, we run into this issue so many times, and, you know, I guess just trying to build up to this piece, particularly when you're dealing with African-Americans, when we deal with it, we just feel as though that, you know, we just don't like people in our business. And I know from my experience and just, you know, being on a college campus, it's the whole thing, I think, that Kathy was saying earlier, everybody just wanted to take pictures. I remember, and I think Chief Walker remembers this story, where this young lady was walking across campus, there was a protective order out, and it was, I knew it had to be over 200 people outside watching this guy fight on this girl. And when I went over to come through the crowd, you know, I went and helped her up, and I asked her, was she okay? And she said she was okay, but the thing that hurt her so much was that so many people watched and didn't do anything. And that, you know, as you guys know, that is very painful to anybody.
Yes.
So it's just, you know, that whole piece, and when she said it, you know, it's just interesting. Again, as I want to refer out to the audience, anybody wants to call in, if you have a question, please press 1 if you have a question or comment. Let's look at this. You know, and this is a piece that's really on the fire right now with the African-American community. You know, we have Anthony Walker on the line, and he's a former police officer. You know, the African-American community is dealing with a lot of issues with police brutality, particularly in the African-American community. That's something that's being, you know, talked about, Black Lives Matter and so forth. Now, do you feel that this will stop victims from even getting police involved or even the bystanders to get the police involved in these matters? And how great of impact do you feel this will have with getting people involved? Let's just hear your comment on that. Do you have any questions on or comment on that?
I actually have a comment in regards to the law enforcement factor that you all were talking about. I think another issue is that a lot of states are developing the mandatory arrest laws so that there are a lot of couples or a lot of instances where the person getting abused, be it male or female, they have the ability to now get in trouble also if they fight back because there are a lot of states that practice. They want to crack down on it so hard, they practice the mandatory arrest laws. So even, you know, if you're trying to fight back to defend yourself and it gets reported, you could go to jail as well when you were trying to protect yourself, you know, or your children or another member of your family.
Right. And that you bring up a good point. Anybody on the panel would like to comment to that?
I have been in that situation where the cops were called to the home, and after me and my ex-husband had got into a fight. During the fight, the rack we had on the back of the bedroom door actually fell and hit his face, and it scratched it a little bit where blood was coming out. So when the police came to the home, they took him outside to talk to him, and they were talking to me. And I ended up being arrested, put in handcuffs in front of my son. And I had to leave the home to, you know, I was arrested. When you know, but they arrested me because they saw, he told them that I scratched him, and they saw that mark on him. So, and, you know, and I wasn't even worried about going to jail. I was worried about leaving my son in the house with him.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, do you have any, Ms. Purdy, I know your situation might be a little different. Okay, let me just, can you guys, if you're on the line.
Somebody's
you,
background.
Yeah.
The phone on mute.
Yeah.
Okay. You.
I was thinking about in your situation. Mm-hmm. When the police were called, did they? I guess you know, was there a fear of calling the police? Maybe because they may not do anything, because they were familiar with the person, or you know, afraid of that the police may do harm to the person. Was that just your case or no?
No, that wasn't in my case, but a lot of times I do know that victims fear calling the police because of the retaliation that they'll receive from the perpetrator after the fact, because the laws are not as strict as they need to be. So sometimes that person can be arrested and be out in less than 24 hours. And even if they're in there a little longer, you still have that retaliation of when they do come out, the fact that you called the police on them. Or even if someone else called the police, sometimes that can just still be the revenge part of it afterwards.
Yeah. You have any comment on that, Kathy? Or Chief Walker?
Yeah, well, I do. And, again, going back to the fact that the ladies who are survivors, they make a very valid point. The fact that retaliation, even with protective orders, being a piece of paper, if women aren't feeling safe, that piece of paper is going to protect them, that certain proximity issues with men are going to be intruded upon on these young ladies and women because of the fact that there is really no protection for them other than that particular piece of paper. So law enforcement have had the strain of having to go out, rearrest perpetrators and very violent men and women in these types of situations because of protective order being violated. And the fact that women, as said by one of the survivors earlier, the fact that the retaliation is going to be even greater because, again, as you brought up earlier, you brought the police into my home. You know, mm-hmm. African-American men have taken their home as a strong domain. To be mm-hmm. intruded upon their home is to them the same feeling that some women feel when they're becoming sexually assaulted, that they have intruded mm-hmm. upon their lives in such a way that it's a total violation. It's more of a perception, as it really is. But to a lot of the African-American males, it's real to them. And they come back and become more violent towards the women in their lives. Now, as a result of legislation, as I said earlier, a police officer can go in and do what has to be done as far as making an arrest. But there are other steps that need to be taken, whereas you find a safe haven within those 32 or 72 hours that a woman can go to where she can find a place where there is a safe haven. Now, with most relationships, men and women know the nature of their partners. They know where they're going to be, when they're going to be. Women have to go to work. That's why you have workplace violence. Men are going on their jobs mm-hmm. and inciting situations. It's intimidating to the women. They're losing their jobs, even if the men don't. These men are stalking. There are a whole lot of different scenarios that is definitely a discomfort to a survivor. And we can come up with all kinds of forums as far as what we can do, but the real, it's a fingerprint approach. As one survivor said, you know, because of the scratch on the batterer, she was taken to jail. Well, that's the discretion that an officer had. But for him to go out and to separate and to talk to them, you know, separately causes a problem. So there's definitely a fingerprint to every domestic violence, but there's one clear-cut case that is violence. And that has mm-hmm. to be dealt with, and it has to be, you know, people have to be put into a safe place. And, you know, it, when women start to see the change in men and that type of behavior in men and women, whatever, you know, my recommendation has been for years that you now need to, you know, find a place to be. Even if you have to go to your boss and tell them, I cannot come to work, I can't be here. And that's another thing. You say that people don't want things to be known in their home. But they don't want things to be known on the job either. So it's a tough situation. It's a very tough situation.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It is a fingerprint approach where, you know, every situation does have a solution, but it really has to, you know, go out for every survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just
and I was
that. Go ahead, Kathy. Do you have any comments? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was that person when I was being abused that was punished. Mostly, I would be punished sexually. He would do it harder and, you know, try to, you know, punish me that way, make it hurt, and as a way of getting back for, you know, for what I didn't do. So I was, you know, so all of those things that the officer named, you know, did happen to me.
Yeah, and these faces of the men that that the survivors are talking about, these are the look of well-meaning men. These are men who are going out with shirts,
mm-hmm.
ties on, accepted in the community as leaders, accepted in the community, they're fitting in. And they have these personalities that, you know, they fit with everything outside of that door of their household. And people are somewhat amazed, shocked at this behavior that men are displaying on the other side of doors. And this is just not coming with what you see some hooded, bearded man. These are ministers. These are police officers. These are professionals. And these are men who have these personalities that they are abusive in the home. And women are sitting on the front row as first ladies in these men's lives. And they're sitting because of a couple of reasons. Some want to use an excuse that, hey, I don't want to lose this position. Some are fearful. There are a lot of reasons mm-hmm. why women are sitting still with this. Men are destroying their lives for the sake of their own gain. So, you know,
and there's probably a
amazing.
Lot of bystanders that's watching that, too. You know, people are just sitting there, and she's sitting there. They know what she went through. They were probably right there the night before. As she sits mm-hmm. before, whether you know she's the first lady, whether she's the wife of the vice president of this, she's a faculty member's wife, and she's sitting there and she's hearing all these accolades of, you know, he's getting this, you know, the abuser is getting all these accolades of,
that he's done this and he's a wonderful person, or she's a wonderful person. And you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, oh, my God, you just don't know what I go home to. And this is interesting, you know, because I think that as I look at all the different tapings that come on television and I'm seeing the issues going on with, you know, African-American males, I'm just wondering now if there's a domestic amongst one of them, even in a dating situation, would the victim feel compelled to even get the police involved because in thinking that there's going to be more harm? Because typically, as we know, they really want the abuse to stop. So it's just one of those things that keeps playing in my head on where are we going to go with this? And what I'm going to do is just take a break for a second and have you guys tell us what you do, because this is Domestic Violence Month. And when we come back, I want to talk about what can we do to get back our village of people and not make this normalized, that it's okay to hit and watch it happen. So I'm going to do that when we come back. But I'd just like to go around and give our panelists a chance so the listeners can listen to the various skill sets we have and what's available to them. And I'll start with you, Tony Walker. Just tell us a little bit about what you do, and if there's a number that they can reach you if they want additional services. All the panelists on my line will be available to do any presentations for any agency, church, or any civic league. And start with you, Mr. Walker.
Well, thank you. First of all, I'm retired Chief Walker, but I am currently a police officer in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm currently working as a police officer. I'm fully certified and licensed as a police officer. I'm traveling the country now supporting HBCUs and colleges because I was on the White House initiative for the 2015 CLEAR Act and for the domestic assault panel. So I'm very much involved in dealing with issues involving sexual assault, trying to redirect police officers on the way they respond and approach, teaching trauma series to police officers, teaching diversity to police officers on how to respond within the black community, because on those issues involving brutality and things like that, there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had as far as how to deal with the African-American male who has an aggressive posture but really has a soft heart. And the fact that same thing that we're talking about tonight, the fact that bystanders, you know, they're responding because the way they are because they're trying to impress people around them. You know, we have a lot of heroes out there. But going back to who I am really just a everyday man trying to do this fight with you women because we don't have enough people who look like me, the African-American male, and who can get out and tell the real story and have the compassion that's needed. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Oh, and I can be reached, if anyone is looking for my number, I can be reached at area code 757-235-2145. 757-235-2145. If I can support you in any way with training or just to have conversation with you about these types of issues.
Okay, thank you so much. Catherine Staten, tell us a little about you and what services you provide. Give us a number so we can definitely reach out to you.
Okay, great. Like I said earlier, I have an organization called My Help, My Hope. And what we do is we bring awareness to the domestic violence here in our communities. I have something called the Be Silent No More campaign, and that's where we go around from city to city to bring consistent awareness to domestic violence. I think education is the key, and we start with that. And then we have other programs that we assist the women and children in crisis with that are in our shelters here in Hampton Roads, the homeless and domestic violence shelters. And we provide resources for the women and children. I goal coach some of the women after they leave the shelter, help them meet their goals and getting back on track from, you know, being in an abusive relationship because you can't get past that. So I'm available. If anybody needs any help, we can help you with resources. We're available. If you want to flee, you can call. I can talk to you. If you have someone that's in a relationship, a domestic violence relationship, and you want me to talk to them, I'm available for all of that. And I can be reached at 757-541-8043. And my website is myhelpmyhope.org. And we're on all the social media websites. Just put in My Help, My Hope, and we'll come up under Twitter and Instagram. And we're just here to, you know, help the women and children. And if a man is abused, if he comes our way, we're here to help them get back, you know, get back on track. Because this abuse is it's about healing, and it hurts you. I was that person that was hurt, and I got, you know, with God's help, I got past that. So I'm just determined to erase the stigma and just get out here and do whatever I can, just like the officer said, and try to, you know, erase this stuff, do something, put, you know, to help people.
Thank you so much, Kathy. And we're gonna go around and go to Natalie, but we will be repeating their phone numbers in, before we close out the air. Okay, Natalie, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Okay, so, excuse me, I'm Natalie Purdy, and I'm an advocate, and I also help victims with any kind of help or to lead them towards resources that they need. And I'm also a speaker, and I can speak at any kind of event or social function in order to raise awareness. My story can be seen on the ID channel, and it's called Dates from Hell, Say Yes or Die. And there's also a show on Lifetime Movie Network called I Dated a Psycho. Excuse me. And I can be reached at 757-663-2629. And if you'd like to email me, it's Natalie Purdy, P-U-R-D-I-E, at yahoo.com. And I'm also on Facebook. And so I'm here if anyone needs any help. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And as you listen and can hear, there's a wealth of experience on the line. We will repeat their phone numbers at the end. This is Domestic Violence Month. However, as far as I'm concerned, every month there should be talked about. But because they did give us a designated month, I'm happy for that. So if you guys are looking for speakers, someone that can come out and speak to you, or even you can refer them, the survivors, to them to speak, you have a dynamic line, a group of folks online. And also with Tony Walker, who's doing some great consulting work across the country, as he talked about, with HBCU. So if there's anyone out there, and even if you're not at HBCU, but you are attending a community college or maybe a traditional white institution, which is fine as well, he is available for anyone to, if you need any assistance, talking and training police officers, faculty, and staff, and students. As I said before we went off, we didn't really go off the air, but before we went around and did introductions, things I wanted us to begin to have some dialogue about is how can we, and I really want the listeners, if you're out there listening, to press one and dial in the comment, how can we begin to embrace or usher bystanders into doing something? Because, you know, there's so much technology out there now. I mean, you have and so many apps where you can download this and they can, you know, send out information to the local police or to someone. What can we do? How can we? Because right now it's like we don't trust anybody and it's none of my business is what I keep hearing, and they're definitely not going to call the police. How do you think we begin to embrace this and start educating? Let's start with you, Natalie. Do you have any ideas on how we can get back our community?
Absolutely.
Because I know there's a big conversation about all lives, Black Lives Matter. I think black, white, purple, I think all lives in this situation, all of them matter. So,
yes.
What can we do? What can we do?
I think that first and foremost, exactly what Officer Walker and Kathy and I are trying to do is you have to bring awareness. But we have to bring awareness aggressively. We can't just try and tell them and break it to them gently. I think we have to continue to use the resources that we have nowadays that we didn't have before. So now you have the internet and you have more people's attention through social media and radio and TV. But even more so, I think that it's so important that it should be taught in school. It should be taught early. It should be taught in elementary. It shouldn't be when they get to high school, when they get to college. And so that's my goal, is to speak to young people. But the younger the better, because a lot of times
they've
already experienced it. They're experiencing it at home, or they know one of their friends that is experiencing it, and these children are quiet and they don't know where to go to get help, and they don't really know that it's a problem sometimes. And that's the way that you've been raised all along, and you've just been told that this is the way it is, and you try to tell someone and you only get reprimanded in one way or another or ignored, then it just will continue. So I think that we need to raise awareness, but we need to start with young kids.
Great, great. What about you, Kevin?
No, absolutely. I think education is the key. And I also think, just like Natalie said, it starts from, you know, with the youth. It also has a lot to do with how the kids are raised in their home, teaching the child how to love themselves.
Right.
And knowing their worth, and that's so important to me. And I failed to mention when we were talking about what we do and stuff. I speak, I train as well. I do workshops as well on this topic. I love talking to the youth. I love, especially young girls, teaching them their worth, explaining to them, you know, how to love themselves. Because I believe that when we are taught and we know how to, when we love ourselves and know our worth, we won't stand for nothing. So, like someone said earlier, when you see that, you know, the person acting aggressively, or you see a sign, you know to go. You have that strongness in you. You know your worth, so you know, okay, I don't have to stand for this. I'm not going to let it get worse. I'm going to exit. No matter how much you love that person or, you know, and this and that, you're going to, you know that I need to leave. And the only way to know that is to know your worth and to love yourself. So I think education and continuing to bring awareness to it and letting people, you know, explain it to them, you know, if you put yourself in that person's shoes, you know, just like, you know, the listeners, imagine if that was your mom, your grandma, your sister, your brother, you know, put yourself in those, in that, if that, you know, think about it, just suppose that was somebody that was close to me that I know, and you take that and then look at that stranger, you know, if you're being a bystander and you see that happening to that stranger, and you say, wow, well, what if that was my sister? Somebody, you know, that should make you want to do something and not turn the other way. You know, I was following, I had a car in front of me one day, and the car was driving in front of me. It was, the traffic was slow, and this guy was punching and he was wailing on this lady in the car in front of me. I mean, he was tearing her up. You know, in her face, punching in her face, I mean, fast. And I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to try to stop the car to wreck or nothing like that. But what I did was I backed up and slowed up my speed to follow the car. And I got the license plate and I called the police. And I followed him at a distance to where he wouldn't notice. And, you know, and I told the police, come quick, you know, to this car, you know, to get this car, because this man is, you know, he's beating on this lady. So, I couldn't just drive away and not do nothing. I saw this right in front of my eyes, you know. So it's just, it's just about doing something, you know. You don't have to get involved. You don't have to stop the fight physically. You can just call the police, or if you're living next door to somebody, knock on the wall or knock on the door or call the police. Do something, you know.
Well, for me, as a law enforcement officer, I tell you what Natalie and Kathy are saying are definitely true. And the fact that these are blatant domestic violence acts, the hitting, the fighting that you see. But the fact that when I listen to survivors, the thing that really moves me is the fact of their silence. When you don't get to see that, what amazes me is the fact that African-American women, they really do have a strong bond with sisterhood. Because it's tough for women to maintain certain types of relationships as friends for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Women fall off because they don't like each other's shoes. They don't like this or they don't like that. So relationships are tough for women. Men can stay friends for 30 years and whatever. Women struggle with friendships. But the thing that most amazes me in these incidents involving domestic violence are the silent victims, these victims who you see as your sister sitting next to you, they come to work the next day, and their personalities are different. Their character is different. They're disheveled. They can't seem to be attentive to what they're doing. And see, I'm a seasoned gentleman. So back in the day when neighbors were saying, you know, I got a good neighbor because, you know, he comes by my house, he looks out for me. Now people are saying I got a good neighbor because they don't bother me. People are not bothering each other. What's happening is that people are not, sisters are not seeing the young lady sitting silent who once had bubbling personalities. And a sister's afraid to go over and say, she's not being beat in front of you. You don't have to drive behind her. You don't have to see her being beaten. But her world is shattered, and you see it in her eyes. And you refuse as a sister to go over and say, are you okay? Not can I help, just are you okay? And sometimes you will get a story that you need to hear in order to help.
You're right.
And the fact that we do not, we're losing, we talk about socialization in the African-American community. That's the way we got through slavery. We had our own underground railroads of information to get information to, because there's fear involved in this. A lot of women are afraid, and they can't talk. So you have to find a way to navigate through the fear and be a strong sister until the story can be told, to be there for her. Let her tell her story. And when she decides she wants you to go forward, you can navigate her through this murky world of these narcissistic men who are perpetrating with these personalities that they're well-meaning men, and they're violating our women. So the fact is that, you know, we as men, you know, men don't want to tell their stories when they're being, you know, when they're going into bankruptcy. You think they're going to tell you about when they're beating their wives because of the bankruptcy? Do you think they're going to tell you that they're going to take out acts like Natalie was talking about with you know, sexual violence in their households? They're not going to do it. So sisters and brothers and listeners all, you've got to be there. And, and from the law enforcement side, this is a law enforcement officer who is talking, who is saying that policemen coming in, I go around the country training, watch the eyes, see the sadness in the eyes. See the fear. That's what this domestic violence is all about. It's fear. And you have to sometime pull back, you know, take the badge and put it to the side for a moment. Be a husband, be a father. And as you know, one of the survivors said, think about this being your sister. One of the most, you know, I'm a fraternity man. So all the behaviors that were being done by fraternity men, you know, I was involved. Not with sexual assault. But where no just meant keep trying. Just keep talking until she does what you want her to do, you know. And men want to turn women into robots. But I don't want to take over the whole dialogue talking about just this. But I tell you, I'm always empowered by the survivors when I hear, you know, Natalie and you ladies talk. It is just so empowering to me to know that you are strong enough to tell your story and that, you know, we're smart enough to listen. And the fact is, and if you spell listen and you spell silent, it's got all the same letters in it. You got to keep quiet. You've got to keep quiet and listen to the heart and look in the eyes of these victims.
Absolutely. These survivors. I like that. Yeah, I like that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that, again, I think you guys bring up a good point. I think what we have to do is, as you all, we're in unison of saying is that we must continue to do the advocacy. We must continue to speak. You know, sometimes you sound like you're standing on the island and no one's listening, but, you know, you just never know. There could be someone who will and has seen you do something or say something, and they hear what you're saying, what they need to do. I'm just, you know, at a point, I'm just wondering, you know, I have grandchildren, and I'm like, I wonder what it's going to be like, you know, when they get older. Or, I mean, this whole thing of violence is just so normalcy now. It's just, it's scary. I mean, it used to be where, you know, you're in a class and you know, I was thinking, you know, all the violence that is going on, particularly in the African-American community, and you ask kids, how many of you in here know anybody that died that's close to you? Well, when I was in school and it wasn't a lot, I bet you every hand will go up in every room. And now with them witnessing as bystanders, you have this whole piece of trauma. I mean, just witnessing it, just being in a home, like Kathy was saying, where her son may have witnessed it. But we pray that, you know, it doesn't have any impact on him. But it's just, what is it going to be like? We're not saying anything, and we're walking by. Oh, yeah, did you see the girl down there? She was getting beat. Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, he was beating her up. But nobody say anything. Our village that we used to have, you know, we talked about it takes a village to raise a child, but our village is sick now. It's just, we don't like, mm-hmm. you know, Walker was saying, we don't know our neighbors, don't care to know our neighbors. And our neighbors were our best alarm system.
Uh-huh.
They would give us descriptions of the car, the tags, how many people were in there, how many fingers they had, everything. Now, uh-huh. we could care less. And I would say this, and I'm not trying to, you know, I know this is a whole issue around police, but police cannot investigate a case by themselves. If they don't
yeah.
have any information, they don't have a case. I just think we need to work closer together. And I know it's you know, something that's been making, but I think with all of you, we can make this happen, but we have a lot of work to do. Does anybody have any comment on this whole thing about bystander and the impact that it does have on domestic violence? And I would like to say this to them, switching around a little bit, because I know we kind of ran over it. One of the things, too, is we're all in the field working in this area and being advocates and so forth. Do you all find it harder when the bystander or being a family member versus a stranger? You know, you watch that happen. You know, do you treat that situation in your family the same way you would if you saw that similar in the street or in the store? We got about 6 minutes. Let's see if we can kind of talk about that a little bit.
I'm gonna put that out there real quick. My family knows. I will call the police. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You're going.
Yeah, I would call the police as well. But real quick, as far as the family, see, my ex-husband's family knew what he was doing.
Oh, wow.
And they knew what he was doing. He had done it to his ex-wife that he was married to for 10 years when he was in the Army. He beat her, too. See, I didn't know that until after we got, you know, a little ways into the marriage. So they knew what he was capable of. They didn't tell me, okay? So, but it was so crazy because they knew it, and I would record him. So they listened to, you know, I would confide some of the things to them, his sisters, and I would let them listen to the tape recording, okay? And we were what I thought was close. But as soon as he went to jail for breaking my hand, they turned their backs on me like he hadn't done a thing to me.
Wow.
And said the typical words to me, well, if he was that bad, if he would see you that bad, why you didn't leave?
Wow. And we hear, you know, Kathy, we hear that all the time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think that that's something we do here. But let me just say, let me to cut you off because we're going to run out of time. I do want we
okay.
do have a call online. Erica, you have a question or a comment? You can go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. My comment was in regards to, you know, being that bystander that speaks up, especially if you're witnessing it. The difficulty that I had in the situation with a family member is that I did either intervene to try to and call the police. And once you do that, it is then up to the victim to take charge. I couldn't do anything if she didn't
right,
press charges.
Right.
At that time, and if you know, and this person I know was with him for 12 years and still talks to him, and he's done things like, you know, dragged her through the parking lot by her hair and punched her in the face. And it's just, after a point, you get so that I called the police several times because it's a close family member to me, and they just won't take the next step. So at that point, it's almost, you're more frustrated as the person that's getting abused when here you are trying to help them, and they're just not moving. And it wasn't in a situation that she couldn't, because she had my full support, be it money, a place to stay, whatever she needed for her and her children. She just would not take that step. But what
right.
I was going to confide to me about it, and it was really, if I'm being honest, it was really hard for me to start being sensitive to her situation after a couple of years because I was like, I really don't want to hear it because I've been trying to help you, and it's not healthy for, you know, your young son or your daughter to see you going through this stuff.
Right. And that, and Erica, I really appreciate you calling in, and that is a tough situation. And I think that, I think as the panelists will agree that this is something we continue not only to educate the community but also our families. Well, we're about to wrap up here, and I do want to, before we close out, this seems to be a very good subject, and probably going to come back on the air again probably in another month or so. I need to talk to our producer and talk about some more shows around this subject matter. But I'm also on Facebook as well, as along with the other callers. So I'd like to hear back from you guys if you have some interesting topics you would like for me to talk about here on our Blog Talk Radio as in reference to domestic violence in the African-American community. And if you want to speak with me about becoming a guest, feel free to give me a call. I can be reached at 757-439-5631. I'm going to go around real quick and ask the panelists if they can just give their name and their contact number before we close out. We'll start with you, Kathy.
Kathy Staton, contact number is 757-541-8043.
Thank you. And Mr. Walker, Officer Walker.
Hi. My phone number is 757-235-2145, and I can be reached by email at ahtonywalker@gmail.com.
Okay. And Ms. Purdy?
Yes, Natalie Purdy, and I can be reached at 757-663-2629 or by email, Natalie, NATALIEPURDIE@yahoo.com.
And my email is myhelpmyhope@gmail.com. That's Kathy State.
Okay. Well, I appreciate everyone that's been listening. This is an issue or a subject that I have been really working with for a long time. As my position as the director of the counseling center at Norfolk State University, I see so many times and have experienced so many times people who have watched it happen. And I just think that we have to find a way to incorporate in our advocacy and our training how to get back our community and take out that normalcy that violence is okay, as well as fighting. We're beginning to see an increase in numbers as I'm researching some information about, you know, juveniles now that are getting involved in the dating violence, and it appears mm-hmm. as though that they think it's okay, and mm-hmm. It's getting worse. And it's like, what are we going to do? I think Natalie even said about starting as young as going back to elementary school.
Elementary, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and you see these things, and sometimes you can just go sit in the mall. Just sit in the mall and just observe, just watch the interaction among families and their children. It's just amazing. And you're beginning to see, it seems like to me, you're beginning to see all these domestic violence cases. You're sitting there eating your dinner, and you're sitting there going, oh, my God, did he just hit her? And
yeah.
It's like, do you say anything? Or you're at the family reunion, and you notice how Uncle Clyde is hitting off, you know, Maybelline, and it's like, oh, what do I do? It's just so much that's going on. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that the more we do these talk shows, and I think the more we do our advocacy, I would reach out to our listeners if they could just, you know, reach out to these folks online that we have. If you have any questions, go to my website, go to their Facebook pages, or their emails, and contact us so we can come out, speak to you, and hear more from you. Again, this is Dr. Vanessa Caldwell-Jenkins, live from the Blog Talk Radio. I hope to see you guys soon. I should be back on the air, I think, next month. Again, as I said, I'll talk to the producer and see what we can do about that. And I'd like to thank all of my panelists for being on, and I appreciate
thank
each
you.
And every one of you.
Thank
and,
you.
And hope to see you guys soon out in the community. Kathy and Natalie, it has been a pleasure working with you guys and continue to work with you. And Officer Walker, even though we worked together in the past, I'm sure we got brighter things in the future that we can be able to collaborate on. Again,
absolutely.
Thank you, listeners, for joining
me
tonight on this Blog Talk Radio.
You.
And we ask that you all have a safe new year that's coming in. It seems like this year is going by real fast. But yes. I wish you all the well in your endeavors. Okay, thank you so much, and that was the end of our show. Thank you, and you guys have a great
evening. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.